Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to everyone. Welcome to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, we're going to deal with a critical issue that is affecting our community. And that issue is, what is going on in our community? And with us tonight, we really have two community organizers, Brother Jonathan Hartow and Brother William Upshaw, who can speak to the theme tonight on to serve the community, a call for a change. One of the key reasons why we chose to have these two individuals today is due to the fact that they are on the ground. They are actually in the community, working with the people, studying the people, trying to understand the people and giving back to the people. They're going to be giving us their perspective on how can we best serve the community and what kind of change are we calling for and what kind of change we really need. So on that note, we'd like to invite Brother Jonathan and Brother Will again, and welcome to Africa on the Move. Welcome to both of you today.
You're glad to be here, Brother.
Thank you, Lee, for having us on. I appreciate it.
Good. Brother Hutto, I'd like to start with you first. First and foremost, can you just give our audience a brief background on who you are?
Okay, thank you, Lee. Once again, thank you for having us on the show, Africa on the Move. My name is Jonathan Hutto, H-U-T-T-O. I'm a native of Atlanta, Georgia. And I first became acquainted with you, Lee, when I was an undergraduate student at Howard University in the late 1990s. I was a political science major there, but most importantly, I was a student activist, ascended to the presidency of the Howard University Student Association my junior year. It was 1997-98, and represented the undergraduate students on the Board of Trustees there in 1998-99. I always will be forever linked to Lee and the All African People's Revolutionary Party because we were the last student administration there in February of 1998 to bring Kwame Ture on the campus about 7 months before he transitioned from his life. That was February 17, 1998. Where he gave his last fireside chat there at Rankin Chapel. And then the next year, we pushed the university to honor him with an honorary degree, which they did posthumously after his transition. And his mother, May Charles Carmichael, came to pick that up for him spring of 1999. And from there, just continued to organize, Lee, in the community through NGOs. And now I'm back on the campus of Howard, going into my second year of doctoral study in political science.
Brother Hutto, I don't know if you care to discuss this, but I would like to raise this with the audience about finding a real interesting young man and a very courageous young man. If my understanding, I do understand that you did spend some time maybe in the military, and while you're in there, you made a decision that's normally not decisions that most soldiers make, which receive world attention. Can you just talk just briefly a little bit about that?
Yes, Lee, I did enlist within the United States Navy January of 2004, and I spent 7 years, 7 months, and 1 day within the United States Navy, and the best thing that came out of that experience for me was the GI Bill, which I'm using right now. But while I was in the United States Navy, January of 2007, myself and a number of us, based upon some conversations we had been having within the ranks, and a connection we made to David Courtright, who was a professor of peace studies at the University of Notre Dame in the Kroc School of Peace Studies. He wrote a book back in the middle 1970s called Soldiers in Revolt, which documented the GI movement of active duty military within the ranks against the war in Vietnam. And it was the inspiration, our inspiration, coming from that document, that book, which documented those struggles, and thus doing our research, coming upon the Military Whistleblower Protection Act, which protected active duty military, which gives us the right to make a protected communication to a member of Congress on any subject without any reprisals from our chain of command. That was the basis for when we launched the appeal for redress, appealing to the United States Congress to end the war in Iraq and return all the soldiers home and to remove all the bases out of Iraq as well. We were able to mobilize over 2,000 plus military personnel spanning 10 countries around the world, the majority of whom were enlisted military. It definitely was, I would say, yeah, I guess it was courageous, Lee, because then this kind of work was not above the ground work that I was traditionally doing. This was clandestine work that I was doing, and I had to link up with a number of legal organizations, military support organizations, Institute of Policy Studies, military families, Veterans for Peace, and a number of other organizations to help us successfully pull that off. And I was able to chronicle that movement in a book that I wrote called Anti-War Soldier, which was published through Nation Books. So, again, and was able to hook up with a number of different organizations right there in Richmond, Lee. That network at the time was called BOND, the Virginia Anti-War Network, which is now the Virginia People's Assembly with Phil Wayo and his wife, Ann. So.
Okay, and we consider what you have done very courageous and very special. I think when history is written, it will be written down from the perspective when it's written by the people. Now, to our next guest, Brother William Upshaw, can you briefly tell us people a little something about who you are?
Oh, yes, sir. First of all, it's such an honor to be here, and I can meet the special guest, too, at the same time. Coincidence, I'm a military veteran myself, U.S. Army Quartermaster. Woo-hoo! Other than that, it's an honor to be here, Mr. Lee Robson. Of course, first of all, giving honor to not only our Creator, which is God, for our visions, etc., but also giving honor to you, Mr. Lee Robson, for your utmost leadership upon your organization.
Secondary,
my name is William Arthur Upshaw III. I'm a visionary, became the CEO, president, founder of a production record company. Back in 1990, we was marked, became to be one of the first independent record company organizations in the East Coast, you know, globally, and now we're worldwide. We was considered to be such as like a New Day Motel, and had as songwriters, we're on tour, actually on tour season now, annually. But all our family is in the industry. Some may know the Grammy Award winning artist by the name of D'Angelo, who is my first cousin. He's associated with Virgin Records. But we're on tour, and we made a mark here in the United States as one of the most prolific record company organizations on the East Coast. Primarily upon the theme today, what I know is in the industry that society today, as you know, there's a lot, the youth is a lot different than the time we was, you know, raised, early years. And previously, on previous shows, they shared me a question that, Mr. Upshaw, why do a lot of the young, you know, people, why do they wear saggy pants, you know, and different, you know, paraphernalia? Well, one reason, like I said, one thing I know about the community, especially in the music industry, is the media. It's the media. It's what the media, you know, broadcasting through the radio stations, the televised, you know, etc., including record companies. You know, we sign artists daily, and we have critique sessions, particularly pertaining to artist development, what particular type of paraphernalia to wear, you know, on stage and touring, because it's an image. When young folks, you know, today see role models, they follow role models. In the days of Motown, which was Berry Gordy, if you notice, all of his artists, they wore suits and dresses, actually sunshade. But during the 1960s, during segregation, you see how the African-American perspective, a lot of people, you know, wore suits and dresses. But we spoke upon recently, they had the march on Washington, D.C. A lot of people don't know, it was a song that was out there, We Shall Overcome. You familiar with that, Mr. Robson?
Yes,
Yeah, We Shall Overcome. And a lot of people don't know that Motown Records actually recorded their song and distributed it across the world. The people who got the music out was Motown Records, We Shall Overcome. Actually, that was one of their biggest single world sellers. A lot of people don't know through history. But primarily, Mr. Robson, I think that through 20 years being in the business, you know, music record company, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, leadership. The role model of leadership.
Okay, let me just stop you. Let me stop you right there, and let's just talk about this concept of leadership in general and the community in particular. And I'd like to first start with Mr. Hutto. As a political organizer, Mr. Hutto, when we talk about to serve our community, from your observation and participation, how can we, at this stage of development, best serve our community? Fundamentally, what we need to do, Mr. Hutto?
Well, I think, you know, hitting on that theme of leadership, I think it's an interesting theme. It's one that we really need to deconstruct, because I come from the perspective that we really have enough leaders, and we're not even trying to build any more leaders. What we need is organizers. You know, when we look at the civil rights movement, it's interesting. The only living spokesperson from that stage in 1963 is John Lewis. And John Lewis, who's now a congressman out of Atlanta, Georgia, was not on that stage representing himself in 1963, but was on that stage representing the true shock troops of the movement at that time. I'm referring to the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. We know this history. We know that the SNCC, which was the most radical but also truly the most progressive organization of the civil rights movement, was an organization that was not leader-led, but was truly led by a group of organizers who used, really saw their mission to really organize themselves out of a job. They didn't go into indigenous communities using a leader mosaic kind of mobilization mode, but they went into communities to really build indigenous leadership on the ground. That's how they was able to spark someone like Fannie Lou Hamer. It was the students of SNCC, people like Charlie Kyle, people like Lawrence Guyot, who was a mentor of mine in undergrad, who was able to spark her leadership. And when she became a spokesperson in that community there in Mississippi to support her organizing, her leadership on the ground, that's what we need here today, Lee. We have produced so many electoral leaders, if you will, mayors and governors and all types of electoral persons. But we got less power. We got less resources today. I'll give you an example. Robert Smith, the author of We Have No Leaders. This is an interesting book because it documents some real history. In 1968, if you look at the platform of the Democratic Party, right there in the platform, it said basically jobs, livable jobs for everyone. That was a plank in the Democratic Party platform in 1968. And it wasn't because we had a bunch of mayors and governors. We rarely had any mayors or governors in 1968. We barely had representation in the Democratic Party. But what we had in 1968 was a strong presence in the streets, radicalism in the streets. The fear that they did not put this in a Democratic Party platform, that our communities would go, quote, unquote, buck wild. Now, let's fast forward 20 years later to 1988. When we had roughly 30% of the delegates with the Jackson delegates, that plank was no longer in the platform, Lee, in terms of jobs. And now today, 2008-2012, we got African American in the White House, and the Democratic Party platform is more reactionary in relationship to black and brown and working class people today than it was in 1968. It's because we traded in our marching boots and our organizing for electoral participation. Politics is not simply voting. Politics is engagement. Politics is organizing. Politics is boots on the ground. Politics is civil disobedience. Politics can erupt into a massive rebellion if the government does not provide the type of resource that has to be provided based upon the taxation and resource that people give to the nation at large. So that's how I look at leadership. We don't need leaders, Lee. We need organizers. We need organizers.
Okay, Brother Osho, let me address this question to you, Brother Osho. Okay. And we'd like to let our listening audience know that in the next 2 minutes, we'll be opening up our phone lines. Right there, our phone lines, they are lit up. They are totally lit up. So people really have interest in this topic today to build the community and the call for change, to serve the community. Brother Upshaw, how would you address the performance of our so-called spiritual leaders? A lot of people feel like the church and our spiritual leaders are not speaking to the conditions that our people have been confronted with. Based upon your work in our community and you in that spiritual realm or working with our people, how would you address that?
Well, that's a good question. I think right now that we live in a day now where there's a whole lot of openness, you know, policy openness, different new laws, all types of things going on. But on a spiritual basis, dealing with the churches now, I think that a lot of the spirituality, most of spirituality churches, God is trying to lead the spirit back to the beginning. And the beginning is when the old synagogue, back in the old synagogue, had an actual church format, should be. And that's the process of the world today. I think the process of the whole world, the community, spirituality today, that we have to focus our education and speakings in the area of the seed of Abraham, allow people to go in business for themselves. That's the word for the day. We have to educate people to create a business and operate to buy and sell amongst each other. That's the key today. We're in a day now, even the United States government, as you know, if you buy a product out the store, it's made in China, you see. But we as a government people, we should create businesses of ourselves, create our own products, and buy and sell amongst each other, just like in the days of Abraham. True story, as you may say, that it was Joseph in prison, and as a governor, then Pharaoh, had a dream that the country Egypt was going under. It's a time like a recession. Actually, a plague is a different recession. But other than that, it was Joseph that Pharaoh knew had the gift to interpret dreams. But that's how leadership is today. We're talking about leadership. It's people in the government system, they're in positions. If something cracked down, a situation, they don't know what to do. So what they do is they call on people like Joseph, symbolically, Abraham's son, which Joseph watched how his granddaddy knew how to boost the economy in time of recession. And what it is was this. He went to Pharaoh. Pharaoh told him that the country is going down in 7 years, and he told him, Pharaoh, share with Joseph, what must I do? He said, let everybody go in business, put all the food in their back storehouse, buy and sell amongst each other. And it did happen. That was the first economical system that saved Egypt in time of recession. Then the scripture says all other countries across the land saw what they was doing, and they bought and sold amongst each other. See, so that's the key. I think today spirituality that we have a day now that there's so much weakness, a lot of openness, but I think the education of teaching has to take it back to the early beginnings, to go in business for yourself,
okay.
Buy and sell amongst each other. Yeah.
Okay, brother. So I'm going to have to stop right there for a second. Our line is really full up. We would like to get some of our callers in, and we're coming back to both of you. As I said to my listening audience, feel free to call in 323-679-0841. We are discussing the issue to serve the community, a call for change, based on some of the things you heard so far from our panelists, our guests today, Brother Upshaw and Brother Hutto. We can go to the line number 6029. We go to line number 6029. Your question, comment, please. Call us 6029.
Yes,
Carl.
Peace. Peace. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes,
Carl.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Yes, we can.
Listen. The last guest has an interesting analysis using the Bible in terms of empowerment for the community. The immediate problem I have with that is that, one, it's a question of interpretation. Also, it's a question in terms of mindset. One of the things that we're going to talk about creating jobs and supporting one another, then we first have to talk about a mindset. One of the problems is that I don't think our people are particularly predisposed in terms of actually doing things with one another, given the social conditioning, political conditioning that our people are confronted with. So my question to that brother is that what is he going to do in terms of changing the mindset of our people? Because after all, if you stop and think about it, there's no more religious people than African people, not only in America but throughout the world. And religion, definitely, if religion is the basis for which we empower ourselves, then you would think that African people certainly would be empowered. So I don't think that religion per se is the issue. It may be for individually, it may strengthen one's resolve in terms of dealing with problems they confront with. But it doesn't think doing anything politically in terms of moving you forward in terms of actually working together to create a better world. And I think in order to create a better world, you got to first and foremost understand the world in which you live in. I think religion makes it very, very possible you make it adequate analysis in terms of the kind of conditions or political reality that you're confronted with. So that is the problem I have. And I'd just like to ask your guest, what would he do in terms of eradicating that slave mentality that exists in our people? And if we don't eradicate that slave mentality in the minds of our people, how do we think we'll realistically move forward in the context of capitalist society? And so let me ask you, brother, and I'll listen.
Okay, what I'll do, caller, I'll put you on hold. And to my guests, I can tell them to hold off right now before they respond back and try to get all our callers in. Then we're coming back to our guests, let them respond and do a closing statement. Okay, so we'll come back. We're going to put you on hold, caller. Let's go to our next caller. Okay, our next caller, your question or comment, please. Caller number 1787. Caller 1787. Welcome to Africa on the Moon. Your question or comment, please. Caller,
yes, you're on
1787.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, caller.
I'm listening to the comments about the community, and I do understand that we are in a situation right now where it seems as though we have gotten stuck because, for some reason, the economic institution does not seem to be benefiting the Afro-American population. If you look at the statistics of 1963, unemployment among whites were half of that among blacks. Today, 2013, the unemployment rate among whites is half of that among blacks. So when you have 6% unemployment among whites and you have 12 to 14% among blacks, it's indicating that we are not progressing. And economics is really and truly one of the basic institutions of our society. Rather than decompartmentalize, I think that we are overlapping family, education, religion, government, and economics. And we are still coming up short every time. I wonder if anyone on the panel would be kind enough, insightful enough, to address the issue of the unemployment rate among Afro-Americans and why it is that regardless of our education, regardless of our toil in the soil, we still seem to be the last hired and the first hired.
Okay, Carl, I can put you back on hold, but before we go to your response, Brother Hutu, I want you to think about that question. I want you to address that one when we come back to you, Brother Hutu. But let's go to our next caller. Our next caller is caller 3802. Caller 3802, your question or comment, please, caller. Yes, caller, welcome to Africa on the Move. 3802. Hello, caller. Last call, caller, your last three numbers, 3802.
Yes,
do you have any questions or comments? Yes,
yes,
we can.
Yes, greetings, Brother Lee, and greetings to your panelists and to the family that's listening. This is Empress Chi. I'm presently in D.C. as we speak.
Good, good. Okay, what is your comments to this discussion on two-spirit community? What needs to be done?
Yes, of course, a very good discussion as usual. And I just want to say that I found this weekend to be very interesting from many perspectives. I was not really too motivated to go over to the mall yesterday for some strange reason. I did, you know, watch some of what happened and did do somewhat of an analogy in regards to it, but I did get a chance to go over to the Shiloh Baptist Church on Friday to attend a session that addressed the, of course, the murder of Emmett Till, and with that there was a panel discussion with the family of Trayvon Martin, his mother, father, and son, and brother, and others were there, and it was very interesting to watch and to also listen to what was being said. And needless to say, it kind of made you feel that you were somewhere, you know, 50 years ago, and not just because of what happened to Emmett Till years ago, but because of what I think one of the callers talked about earlier is the mentality of people. And the question has been raised in this dialogue, what do we do about the mentality of our people? And so, obviously, in seeing yesterday how it was flashed over and over on the news how civil rights leaders now endorse the gay lesbian platform. Certainly, we now realize, and I'm working on an article entitled The Coronation or the Crowning of the New King, because what we saw yesterday, as far as I'm concerned, is the crowning of the new civil rights, if not persons, movements, but certainly persons as well. And with that, a particular mentality that's going to be pushed in our communities a bit more vastly. With that said, the question again, well, what are we going to do? And needless to say, we really must begin to do something. Those of us who feel that as Africans in this place, we have to begin to move forward in some other kinds of ways, and certainly the issue of human rights must now be pushed forward a bit more aggressively. Civil rights, of course, are fine and should be dealt with, but human rights must now be, I think, pushed forward. And so that is what the Mean Woman Movement is now doing. And on October 25th, we will be at the Justice Department as we charge genocide and demand an investigation into the practice of eugenics today or in recent years after the Human Rights Declaration was signed, but also to say that our students, those students today that are in debt as a result of trying to get so-called higher education, we're saying as mothers and daughters and as a community that our students should not have to pay this debt. As a form of reparations now, we can begin to look at some of how some of this can be dealt with. So, again, I think it's important that as a people, and when I say as a people, I'm speaking specifically of those who have some understanding or better comprehension of what's really going on, it's incumbent upon us to now develop some strategies that represent the 21st century and beyond, and with that begin to make it very clear that the issue of Africans in this place, as well as in other places, has to be one that addresses the obtainment of total human rights.
Okay, caller, we're going to put you on hold, and we're going to go to back to our panelists and our guests, and we're going to ask them to address some of these questions and issues that has been raised. First and foremost, though, I'd like to alert my listening audiences that if you do not hear the entirety of this program, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Africa on the Move to hear the entire program. So we're going to go over a little bit today because this is something that people have interest in and we think it's worthy of more time. So right now I'm going to go to my brother Hutto. I think the question that was addressed towards you was the question around how do we deal with religious economic system, this question of lack of unemployment, this question of employment, you know, the hardship that it has imposed upon our people. How do you address the sister question, Brother Hutto?
Well, thank you, Lee. I think back to actually the teaching of Kwame Ture around this question of whether or not we have economic problems. The late Kwame Ture was always consistent in saying that we really didn't have an economic problem. Whenever he said this, he would always raise eyebrows in the room. But then he would break it down. He would break down that, you know, if you really think about it, if we could get all African people within the United States and throughout the world to join an organization doing the work for African people, and then to economically contribute to that organization in the amount of cents, in terms of 10 or 15 cents a month, he would actually calculate the amount of money we would generate within a year. I don't have a calculator in front of me to do that right this second, but it was upwards in the millions and over the years, billions of dollars. What we have in our community, quite frankly, Lee, is a problem of unorganization, of not being organized, of number one, our people not being members and actual contributors to their organizations, whether that be the NAACP, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, organizations on the ground like the People's Coalition for Police Accountability, where I am here in Prince George's County, organizations throughout the stratosphere, and if there's not an organization that serves our interest, then to build an organization, to join that organization, to support that organization, and finally for us to bring all of our organizations into a united front to work in the interest of our people. Our problem is a political problem. And I put forth that politics is primary in that way, and if we struggle around that issue, we will solve the economic problem. If you look at African people within the United States as a nation of people, and I would argue that we have those characteristics, it has already been already analyzed that we have the eighth largest gross national product in the world. The problem is that our money that leaves our community, it does not even turn over 2 to 3 times within our community. So I do believe, Lee, that we do need more businesses, more African-owned businesses. But I would have to say that even though we need more African-owned businesses, that building businesses alone is not going to solve the actual dire conditions of our people. The problem is the fact that we live in a society that is profit-based. One of the callers said that we need more civil rights. I mean, that's something that plays on Jesse Jackson in the 1970s. Well, Richard Nixon would be very happy of that because he was the one that perpetuated black capitalism. I maintain that a system that's based on profit, as Dr. King said to us, that it's not enough for us to fling a coin at a beggar, that ultimately we must struggle with the question of why we live in a society that produces beggars. Because I maintain that we have to create a people-centered society, not a profit-driven society, but a people-centered society. And that ultimately, if we struggle to create a society that's people-centered, then we don't have to struggle with this whole question of civil rights and economic problems, because as long as you live in a capitalist society, you're going to have unemployment. Everyone in a capitalist society is not going to be employed. We have to shift the struggle to create a society that is people-centered, not profit-centered, that puts the interest of working people above the interest of corporate heads and those who own the means of production. We want the means of production in the hands of the people directly.
Okay. Now, we can come back to our callers, but I'd like Brother Upshaw. Brother Upshaw, one of the other callers raised with two on, there seems to be not a lack of shortage in terms of our people's spiritual. And how do you really reconcile that contradiction? We are spiritual people, but it may be difficult to use that as a tool to move our people forward. Then we'll let our callers come back in and respond to your response. So how would you respond to that, Brother Upshaw?
Again, Ms. Robinson, that and one thing I learned spiritually is that there's two types of economical systems, actually. You have God's system, you have the world system. This is when the thing separation of church and state comes to play. You see, but also, too, there's a mindset of upon conditioning of going into business for yourself. You know, we as a people. So what it has to be done, we have to have consistent teaching, consistent reprogramming so we learn the fact how to go in business for ourselves and buy and sell amongst each other and create jobs for our own. Okay? But also, too, yeah, hello, Ms. Robinson, are
you there? Yeah, we're there.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, also, too, the colleges, a lot of students are going to colleges. When they enter college, they get degrees, or when they come out, they actually get a job, but the jobs are scarce. So this is all applied to going business for yourself from your degree. And we are one of the large consumers, but as a whole, I think that every African-American, respectfully, family should start teaching your grandchildren the principles for the future. The grandchildren, the children are the future. So pour all the seeds into them, and that will help the generation for the future.
Okay. Now, to our caller who addressed the issue of the economic question, caller 1787. Caller 1787. You can respond, but I'd like to raise a question to the for caller 1787. How does she feel about the community as it comes to supporting the youth? And she has a particular problem she may want to share with our audience briefly on her situation as it relates to the community and what's going on with her. Go ahead, caller. Your statement, comment, please. 1787.
Yes, Mr. Lee, I'm here, and I appreciate the panel discussion because I'm old school also. I really and truly appreciate their background and their understanding about where we have come from and how long we have been struggling. I have a son that is what you would call a military brat. He was born on a military base because our family was former military. This young man is now struggling for his life and his freedom because local law enforcement officials confiscated his computer. He is a college grad. He's never had a problem with the law. But now he's fighting for his life and his reputation because they're using his computer to build a case against him, a case that is really bogus. And we have been struggling with his defense. We are in need of help because this young man really and truly is being attacked unfairly and unjustly. Not only is he being asked to provide your analysis, but he's never had a problem with the drug. And all of his UAs for the last 3 months have been clean. And they are bouncing for him from one hearing to another hearing, seeing if they can break him down. He's a young black man who's been very strong. We have asked the community to join us in building a defense to clear his name because we know that this young man has committed no crime. So we are asking the community on your show if they can donate any amount of money to help us towards his defense, we will be sure to get him the proper legal defense that he needs today. His name is Michael. And we have established a fund that's called Save Our Son Defense Fund. It is a tax-exempt organization, and any amount that you donate will be used in his defense. Please call me if you need to find more information at 720-499-5146 or email me at saveoursons2013@gmail.com. This young black man has invested in himself. He was recruited out of high school into college. He stayed on the college campus for 5+ years. He finished his education. And local law enforcement says, well, he's not in trouble. He's not causing any problem in the street. So we'll see if we can find something. They came in and confiscated his computer when he was not at home. He was not at home when they took his computer. They took his camera, cell phone, anything related to technology that they feel could help them build a case against him. I am his mom. And as his mom, and as a former military family, we've paid our dues. We've served abroad. I came out of the South, and I remember the marches. I was in 11th grade when Dr. King was talking, and we were struggling to get on the buses. I know what it's like to go to separate waiting rooms. I know what it's like to ride in the back of the bus. I know what it's like to drink from a different water fountain. I know what it's like.
Okay, caller, you got about 30 seconds to tie up your point, and we'll make sure that they will be get your information.
Yeah.
30 seconds, call.
As we've said before on your show, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You're talking about a march 50 years ago? I feel as though I'm living in the same air of 50 years ago because we're still struggling for justice. We're still struggling for equal rights, and we're still struggling for jobs. But today, I'm struggling for my son's life and freedom. And I really and truly would appreciate the public support. And if you can help us, please, please do so. You can send a donation to Post Office Box 58, Save Our Son, Englewood, Colorado, 80151. Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you. And we're going to our last caller that we had on hold, caller. You got about 1 minute to make a statement based upon what you heard from our panelists. Here we can close out the program with some statements from our panelists. Caller 6029, give me your response to what you heard up to this point. Caller 6029.
I don't think Brother Upshaw addressed the question, my concerns. Let me just simply say, ask Brother Upshaw,
does he believe that political institutions exist, and if they do exist, do they adversely impact on African people?
Okay. Before we do that, I have to let our panelists know we got a little less than 5 minutes. One thing we do want to do with both our panelists, Brother Hustle and Brother Usher, can y'all just talk a little bit about the work that you're doing in your community and how maybe people can help you out? Sorry, with Brother Hustle.
Okay. Well, once again, Lee, thank you for having us on the show today. And I'm the principal organizer and chairperson of the Prince George's People's Coalition, which is an outgrowth of the Prince George's County People's Coalition for Police Accountability. We're based here in Prince George's County, Maryland. Our coalition formed in the fall of 1999. At that time, black men, black boys, get shot and killed wholesale here in Prince George's County. It was a case out of Howard University at the time. A year later, Prince Jones, who was a classmate of mine, killed by a Prince George's County cop in Fairfax County, Virginia. We formed this coalition to address the pervasive problem of police brutality, police torture, police terrorism here in this county. We built a broad-based coalition that has been consistently going to this issue for years now. We were successful bringing the Justice Department in, getting a memorandum of understanding from the Justice Department, which helped quell some of the killings and some of the shootings. We're right now pushing on the case of Archie Elliott to push the state's attorney here in Prince George's County to reopen that case 20 years after that vicious killing in 1993. How people can help us is basically you can send any donations that you want to us. You can send them to 4400 Remy Drive, Suitland, Maryland, 20746. Address it to the Prince George's Coalition. But then also you can also send a request to us on our Facebook page, Prince George's People's Coalition, and we'll add you to our page. You can get involved in our actions, which once again, I want to thank you, Lee, for having us on. And just want to finally stress to people that, you know, don't wait on the national leadership to speak to the issues there in your local community. There's a difference between mobilization and organization. So the national leader, I think someone said that we have new leadership today. Well, that new leadership at that national mode is still coming in the same mode of that charismatic, mosaic leader that comes to mobilize us around issues. What we need, and I'm coming specifically in terms of what Kwame Ture taught us, is that mobilization seeks influence. Organization seeks power. And what we want to do is shift the power here in this country. We need organization. We need folks to attend meetings on a weekly basis, to commit to those meetings, to contribute to those meetings, and to build and organize in their local communities. Our enemy organizes against us day in and day out. We have to be just as vigilant for our justice as the enemy is.
I'm trying to
squash us. Thank you so much, Lee.
Because of time, I have to tell you, and about quickly 2 minutes, Brother Usher, tell the people what you're doing and what kind of event you got coming up. You can do it by less than 2 minutes, please. Brother Usher. Brother Usher, are you still there? Hello, Brother Upshaw? I think we may have lost our caller, our last speaker, but we are dwelling down to our last minute. In closing, we'd like to thank Brother Upshaw, Wayne Upshaw, and Brother Jonathan Hutu for coming on Africa on the Move today to address the issue to serve our community, a call for change. We'd like to thank all of our audience, our listening audience, for their participation, for their input, and for them spreading the word, let them know every other Sunday at 6 o'clock. We can deal with issues directly affecting Africa, the African people, on Africa on the Move. We do believe that information is power. We know that without information, people cannot think, and without organization, they cannot think clearly. So we highly encourage you to join an organization that's doing something for your people. If they are not doing anything worthy based upon your interests and your analysis, then you have responsibility to create one. Until next time, let's continue to struggle to go forward ever and backwards never. Let's try to help our brothers and sisters out in California, brothers and sisters out in Maryland, wherever they are. We are one community, with one history, we are one people, with one struggle. Until next time, we thank you for watching. We thank you for listening to Africa on Your Move. As your host, Brother African, we see you on the next program in 2 weeks. We thank you.